non-violence practiced by Mahatma Gandhi far surpasses the ordinary practice of it by many people. And in that sense, he may be called the vibhuti of non-violence. You see, the divine aspect of non-violence manifested in man. In the avatar, the incarnation, the nature attains the highest perfection. The avatar of the incarnation aspect is an important part of Indian conception of the divine, and it has been brought into prominence by the Gita. In the Upanishad, the avatar word doesn't find a place. The avatar is not mentioned in the Upanishad. Which points out the evolutionary significance of the avatar. The avatar is not a miracle that comes out to overawe man or to, you know, to dazzle mankind's consciousness. Avatar comes to fulfill evolutionary need. He comes to show man how to evolve to a divine consciousness with the human nature, you see. The divine is not some absent landlord away from life, or it can take up the human nature and the human form. Some religions like Christianity accept one and only one incarnation of the divine. They practically limit the omnipotence of the one into one single act. But the Hindu view of omnipotence of God cannot, according to Hindu view, it cannot be limited to one incarnation, and therefore the Hindu admits many incarnations including Christ. The Sri Krishna says that I have accepted human birth and action, and one who knows my birth and my action as divine really knows me. Not myself as the divine, not my soul as the divine, but my birth and my action also is the divine. Janma karma cha me divyam, that is the word in the Gita, you see. My birth and my action, which happen in nature, you see. Not one who accepts my consciousness as the divine. No, my birth and my action, when you accept that as the divine, then you know me thoroughly. That I am not a human consciousness, but a divine that has taken birth and divine that is acting. Gita points out that the divine action by the human being is possible. That a human being can act divinely. It is possible by a gradual development of human consciousness, and this is made clear in the Vibhuti Yoga chapters by Sri Krishna declaring, I am Arjuna among Pandavas. Pandavanam Arjunoham. See? When he says, I am Himalaya among the mountains and Ganges among the rivers, then suddenly in one verse he comes and says, I am Arjuna among the Pandavas, and he is addressing Arjuna. He is speaking to Arjuna, you see, and he says, I am Arjuna among the Pandavas, means yourself. So you can see how the existence of the divine will be unknown to the individual, and the divine will be conscious of his divinity in him. Arjuna must have been very much surprised to be told that he is the incarnation or vibhuti of the divine among the Pandavas. If I had to become anybody among the Pandavas, I will become only Arjuna. And I am Arjuna. He states that I am Arjuna among Pandavas, and he is addressing Arjuna, you know, personally, directly speaking to him. Now, Krishna declaring Pandavanam Arjunaham, I am Arjuna among the Pandavas, and Arjuna would be carrying the divine will and therefore doing the divine action if he participated in the battle. To act in life from the divine poise, therefore, is possible from the Gita's point of view. And even a five-year plan or a Tibetan situation or some disturbing incident can seek guidance from it. It's not merely that you can take guidance in religious life. Sri Aurobindo's last chapter in the essays in the Gita is not merely a brilliant summary, but one of the most inspired chapters in the world's philosophical and religious literature. That is for this evening.
Getting back to the beginning of the Yamas of this year, the two people, or the two tribes, two groups, were separated. The Gita came through which unit? No? Neither?
No, Gita was subsequently written. Gita must have been written perhaps 1,000 or 1,500 years after.
After that.
Gita is not participated. It's put in that like a poet. Supposing, you see, just as Milton puts it in the Revolt of Satan. Now, Milton was not a participant anywhere. He was only a Protestant. But but he puts his poem in a situation where you have to go to the beginning of the world, is it not?
What did this come from? What group of people did this come from, writing?
This writing is a result of historical, they have tried, but there is no certain data found. It was a Bhagavad religion, a religion that was current, of which Gita, they say, was an expression. Yes, but this is a thesis, you see, it's not a certainty. Gita must have been, according to them, a result of the Bhagavad sect, which was current in western part of India and central India. Well, that is a conclusion, but this is a hypothesis. Mm-hmm. It's maybe that the man who saw so many things current thought of putting it together or practiced a yoga which gave him the synthetic idea, because he practiced the yoga in which devotion, karma and knowledge are all integrated completely, you see. So that it's not an exclusive yoga which the Gita preaches. Gita preaches a synthetic yoga of knowledge, action and devotion simultaneously. First 6 chapters are devoted to one aspect, 6 to 12 are devoted to second aspect, 12 to 18 are devoted to third aspect, like that, you see.
We don't know actually if it was a basic individual idea or a collective
group. No, that is, you see, historicity is very doubtful. That is the difficulty with Indian literature and culture in general. The sense of history is very weak in Indian mind. They are trying to live in the eternal, trying to live in the eternal. So, who wrote, where he lived, how, nobody bothers about it. Kalidas, who happened even in classical time, nobody knows where he lived, what was. You can always make a thesis and fill, you know, but it's a hypothesis. They don't care. They don't mind. That was a defect in one sense, historically, because you can't precise anything. You can't look at the author, you can't know his life, where he was, which city, nothing. These works are raised to the heaven and they hold it up like that. Kalidas, oh wonderful, they will say. But where was the Kalidas? Nobody knows.
Okay.
They will say Ujjain, another says Kashmir, third says Calcutta. Now who is right? The Bengali thing, he must be in a Bengali. Because Kalidas, and Kali is worshipped in Bengal now.
Okay.
See, Kali must have come some centuries after Kalidas. We don't know, but the Bengali is fully that way and they say, he was near Calcutta. The Rajputana people say he speaks of Ujjain and Ujjain is in Rajputana, so he must have been Rajputana. But he speaks of Kashmir in one of his Meghdoota, the cloud messenger. So they say he was a Kashmiri. How can it be? Now Kashmir, Rajputana and Calcutta. See, one is in the east, one is in the center, third is in the north, and divided by at least 500 to 700 miles.
Is there a record of the material that the book was written for?
Nothing. Only the book is there. There was no printing press at that time, most probably. So what they used to do was employ one man and he goes on writing, you know, 50 copies, 100 copies, and then a king or a rich man, when he wants to be very generous or charitable, he distributes to literary persons or schools or colleges or, you know, the seminars. And they have a copy. They copy again from there.
That's
the way
it grew.
Yes, so
memorize a lot of things.
Yes, that is tremendous, you know,
yeah.
Idea what they can memorize.
Yeah.
You go to Kashi and you'll be staggered.
Yeah.
From one end to the other and back from this to other end.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Gita hundreds in India remember by heart.
Mm-hmm.
They memorize and heard those, they go on repeating.
You know, when we were in India, Franny, this little girl, I think she was just 13, 12 or 13, she knows the whole Gita by heart.
Yeah.
And it's fun. I tried it. It's sort of thing that's very difficult to memorize. You know,
no, but when you like it, you see.
Yes.
When you come to like, you go on doing it.
I thought she was doing it when she did it in the
past. Hmm? You want to shoot somebody here?
I got a video. She likes to see it in sense.
I think it sounds good. Could you give us some lines that are inspiring from the Gita? English? No.
Well, we'll get it next tomorrow. There is.
But it's all theoretical now. It doesn't mean anything except it's just an outline and so on, so as such and so on.
Well, it relates life and God and makes life a field for reaching God, which is a very great thing, I think. That is the first scripture in the world for the matter of that. That is based on a life situation. And points out that in life these questions do arise and you can get a reply from your inner self and you can make it as a step to reach the divine. Now that is rather practical than theoretical, I think. Gita doesn't philosophize at all. Gita simply says, oh, you are in a battlefield, don't think that the battlefield is yours. God can act in the battlefield. That's how it would speak if you asked the writer of the Gita. He says, I'm not telling you any philosophy at all. You want to practice, you want to think that this is your battlefield, that is your mistake. There is a divine purpose to be carried out in the battlefield. You find out that and carry it out. And it's a very great message. Because it pertains to life. It shows how to come to a decision when two things are, at variance. One duty and another aspect of the same duty coming to you. See, your duty towards family and duty towards country, or a moral value and actual conditions prevailing in your own individual life. How to choose? Then one has to understand Vivekananda's situation. You take, he was the only man who could have supported his family. His mother was a widow. And he had a brother to support. Now whether he should take sannyas or practice as an advocate? It's a practical question. Gita comes to your help and says, you decide by inner voice. No family, nothing, no social life, no morality. That's it. If Vivekananda had chosen, you would have known Vivekananda. Gautam Buddha was inheritor of a small principality. And he was husband of a wife and father of a child. Now has he a duty to owe which owes to his father, one, to his wife and his child and to his state, second and third, or to this call how to cure men's suffering? Or to decide, you see? Gita gives you the guidance to show how to act. This is a very great thing. Because this happens in many people's case. And people always compromise and say, no, great things are good to think of, but not to follow. That's what they say always. It must be a very good thing. It is good to think like that, but we must not do. Somebody else must jump into the fire. See? If you want to go to heaven, it's oneself must die. That's the rule. It is not somebody else dies and we go to heaven. That's not possible yet. That value has to be practiced by the individual. That is what Gita insists, and that's a very great lesson. Gives you view that the world is divine. No other scripture gives in that, picturesque way in which Gita gives you the experience of how to practice the presence of the divine in life.
Honey, I have some little inexpensive copies of the Gita in there, and the issue with Prabhavananda translation. It isn't my favorite translation, but it's a little paperback book, a little inexpensive one if anybody wants to look at it.
I would recommend Anil Baran's and Essays on the Gita if you want really to understand.
Well, to understand, but Ida was asking for some lines from the Gita, and they're in there.
Oh, Gita has various inspired passages. The whole of the 11th chapter is inspired. Whole of the 11th chapter is inspired.
He asked to see the Creator, and he did see the Creator, and I read it one morning sitting in the sunshine, and I thought, my goodness, if I would see Adam, that's what I'd see. It's a swimming, rhythmic movement. Tremendous.
The 11th chapter describes the cosmic being as destroyer. Cosmic in its destructive aspect. And it is that which is speaking in the Gita, you see. So it says, I am time, the destroyer of the people. Like that it begins. And it's not you who will kill, but I have already killed these people. Very inspired. It is one of the most inspired passages in the world's literature. Now the essays on the Gita is very inspired, Sri Aurobindo's writing. The essays on the Gita which you have, the last chapter, the message of the Gita. It is like the 11th chapter. They are very high. This was the modern man, the inspiration. Yes. The same inspiration coming through Sri Aurobindo. Wonderful. It is a marvelous chapter. Last message of the Gita. It is Sri Aurobindo's writing, only his summary is the whole thing. But represents marvelously. It is marvelous. Message of the Gita. It's a wonderful passage. You need not read the whole Gita, I should read that. It is so all inclusive. Last chapter of the essays in the Gita. That as you have seen me, many great seers even have not seen me. It is very difficult to see me. And it's not because you deserve that you see me, but I want you to see me. That's why I'm showing you. That's how he says. The cosmic destructive aspect is telling him many seers want to see me, but they are not able to see me. And I am not coming to you because you deserve, but I want to reveal myself to you and make you understand what is being done here in this battlefield. Therefore, I have come to reveal my form to you. And then Arjuna says that I can't bear you, therefore please become what you were before with the normal human body and the beauty of the human form and so on. This is too terrific for me, I can't stand it very long. So he takes his human form and again he says, oh, excuse me, I was thinking you are a human being, that you are son of Vasudeva and you are to relate it to me like my brother-in-law and so on, all that was my mistake and I have cut jokes with you and I have thought you to be a human being, all that you must excuse me. When he comes to the human form, Arjuna begs pardon for all his treatment of him as a human being.
Yeah, here someone went all the way to India to see Sri Aurobindo and they found out they couldn't see him except for a few minutes, you know, on the day of Darshan. And they say, what makes him? He said, only a few minutes after coming all this way. And they said, well, what makes you think you could stand to be in his presence for more than 3 minutes?
I just remember that.
Yes.
Was it Sigurd?
Yes.
Sigurd told that on himself.
Yes.
That way he was San Francisco,
right? Unforgettable 29th of February.
Yes.
The unforgettable date. He didn't refer all the detail, but he told them that. Yes, he was attended one of the Light Yuan classes which I took there.
Oh, did he? Sigurd?
Movement of nature.
Movement of nature.
Thought movement, vital movement, you know, suggestions, thoughts. All that flows and acts is Prakriti, and that which detaches and watches is Purusha.
Integrates the science of karma, bhakti, and tapas. Sankhya too?
Sankhya and Raja Yoga also, partly Raja Yoga.
Sankhya
is a system of philosophy in which Purusha and Prakriti are regarded as two eternally separate elements. Vedanta puts them together and makes them one. Purusha is not regarded as separate from Prakriti, but the originator of all the energy that Prakriti has. So that the two become one. One is the static aspect, another is the dynamic aspect of the same reality. There is no opposition between the two, according to the Vedantic school.
This morning, I was wondering if anyone had ever drawn up or composed a chart of the sequences that have developed in cycles of man's processes as through a, you know, the what we could call a beginning of his awareness into the realm he stands now, into the frequencies of Buddhism and this other work that we're bringing out, you know, to describe to us. I wonder if anyone has ever charted this and brought the variations in. Anyone at the ashram?
I don't quite yet catch your question. What is it?
You mean put it into a chart?
Put it into a chart. As man awareness comes in other words, there was a cycle of knowledge given through Buddhism, and something given through the Gita, or something given through all of them. How can man's knowledge be charted in these various realms of knowledge that's been given? In other words, how much is he gained by it, and when did they come into their sequence?
The whole point is that now the present generation stands on all that.
Stands on, yes.
Yes. So,
I mean, there must have been a rise and a deep...
So what has been done has been already either, you know, accepted or assimilated into the condition in which man stands today. It's not as if Buddhism, of course, to some people to whom Buddhism is a traditional religion and so on, it is standing even now there and they are trying to make something out of it. But what they can take out of it is what we have decided and discussed. What they can take out of it is only the attitude of controlling nature by ethical values and rising to a static condition in which action of consciousness stops. That's as far as they will go, whatever they may do. You want to follow what I say? Yes. Yes. So that's all. It's there. But now a synthesis which Arundo brings it to being, you get all that has been done is there already. You are adding many elements more than what was done before. There was no conception of a real idea or a truth consciousness, for instance. There was no idea of a capacity of man's consciousness to ascend to higher consciousness and then bring down something of the higher consciousness into his nature part. So many new elements have been already added on that basis of control, ethical values, separation of self, and actionlessness inside or impersonality inside, and activity outside. All those elements have been assimilated. They are there. The present synthesis leaves nothing of the past attainment behind. You don't follow what
I realize. Huh?
Yeah, that's it. So the point is that, for those who are interested in the history of the past, they can go back and try to find out. But otherwise, as the whole thing is present, we don't bother about taking an intellectual point of view.
The only thing, the presentation to an active mind, you can visually see that this procedure has taken place and the cycle has extended. The population is so great at this time, and the population is so great here, and in that proportion, this other knowledge was given in, you see, and manifested to a greater awareness here.
Yes. Yes, that is true.
It would be good to, as a presentation point, to create a higher thinking value.
You mean like some of the brownies, the schemas?
Yes, in other words, just
picture of it. In picture
form. Or graphic illustration.
I do it only to help understanding, that's all.
Amen.